I stood up and I turned around and I looked back at the table and I saw myself laying there. And I walked out of the room with my Grandma Rose, who has been deceased since 1981. And she said something to me and I caught that it couldn't be my Grandma Rose. Then her face became distorted and demented and really disfigured, and I knew it was a demon. Welcome to That Creepy Radio Show. I'm your host, Nikki Luciano, along with my co-host, William Crooks. So I thought we'd get into talking about astral traveling. There's a scientific explanation for it, but there's also a paranormal explanation for it. And I think I'd like to delve into both of them today if we could.
Yeah, I always like the paranormal explanations.
Yeah, scientific is too whitewashed, I believe. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a severed limb.
Yeah, it seems like scientific explanations always want to clean things up so that they're not that impressive.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, they want to make sure, like, oh, what you think is happening isn't happening. Nothing that hasn't been clearly defined already could possibly be happening. Here's why. Here's what your brain's telling you. You know, don't believe your lying eyes. Believe our concrete theories of science.
Well, I'm sure we all have our own experiences with astral traveling. I know quite a few people that do it, and I've had experiences with it. I'm sure you have too.
But for people who haven't, how do you define an astral projection?
Okay. So science says, there is no known scientific evidence that astral projection as an objective phenomenon exists. Although there are cases of patients having experiences suggestive of astral projection from brain stimulation treatments and hallucinogenic drugs, subjects in parapsychological experiments have attempted to project their astral bodies to distant rooms and see what was happening. However, such experiments have not produced clear results. Psychologist Donovan Rawcliffe wrote that astral projection can be explained by delusion, hallucination, and vivid dreams. Purported evidence of the ability to astrally travel great distances and give description of places visited is predominantly anecdotal and considers astral travel an illusion. He looks to neuroanatomy, prior knowledge, and human belief and imagination to provide prosaic explanations for those who experience it.
So now how would you define it?
Well, I could go into the story. I'm sure I wrote about it in my book, Fire Within Me. I had an actual experience where I was in one of those group chats on the computer. I was sitting downstairs in my family room. My daughter, Missy, was on the couch across from me. It was a paranormal group that I was having a chat with in this chat room. And this guy, his name was William Sears, came on and he's like, Nikki, I've been waiting for you to come into this room. And this was like the third time I had been in this chat room. I didn't know the guy from Adam, never talked with him before. And he's like, you really should decorate your house in lighter colors because the brick red that you have your family room, he says, it's very off-putting. And I'm looking around the family room like, okay, somebody's pranking me.
Right.
And he's going on and on and he's giving me all these descriptions of my house. Now, my youngest daughter, Destiny, was in the other room in the shower, taking her shower. And he started talking about astral projection. And he says, I don't need a map to find you. And I'm like, what in the hell is this guy on? I thought he was like drugged out or drunk or something, or out of his mind. But he's describing the room around me, and my grandkids are playing on the floor, and he goes, "Oh, she's so cute." And I was like, "Who?" He says, "The little girl on the floor." Well, that was my granddaughter, Mia. And she was probably 4 years old at the time. And I felt the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
That was going to be my question. Like, what vibe were you getting from this? Because I would have been getting a really creepy vibe.
Yeah. And it makes you think there's a camera hidden in the room. So I'm scanning the room with my eyes and I'm looking around, but trying to pay attention to this guy on the computer. And he's like, "Have you ever heard of astral projection?" I was being very snotty to him, and because I was getting mad because he can describe everything. I was like, "More like asshole projection for you, right?"
Right.
He's like, "Don't play around." He says, "I deal in dark forces that you wouldn't even understand." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And I'm trying to get the administrator, the admin, to come on, and I'm typing her name and she's not coming on. So I have to deal with this guy. He says, "Do you want proof?" And I said, "Sure," you know? And all of a sudden my lights in the family room goes from bright all the way dim down to darkness, all the way to off. And there's no dimmer switch on my light. Then the lights start coming back on again. And he does this like 4 or 5 times. Well, Destiny, my daughter, who's in the shower, comes running out of the bathroom naked with just the towel barely wrapped around her. And she's like, "What in the heck is going on?" And I said, "I'm dealing with some kind of idiot on the computer." She's like, "Well, turn it off." And I says, "Well, no, I want to find out what he's doing." Well, he waited a few more seconds and he goes, "So how did your daughter like the shower? How did you know my daughter was in the shower?" He says, "Nikki, Nikki, Nikki, I told you, I don't need a roadmap to find you." Then the admin came on and she's like, "Mr. Sears, we are banning you from the site. We are blocking you and you are no longer welcome on here." Okay, that's good. Somebody finally has my back. By this time, my grandkids are all on the couch next to me. They're so tight to me. They're like glued to me.
And they're all reading these texts as they come through?
No, they're not. The grandkids aren't reading them. I'm reading them.
They're just huddled up because of the lights and the weird things that are happening.
Yeah, the lights and then the back patio door, which is in the same room that I'm in. The door is just vibrating and shaking, you know, like somebody's trying to get in. So, all right, that's enough. And this woman, the admin, she's like, "I'm a white witch and I put a circle of protection around your house. I've been doing this the whole time he was talking. That's why I didn't respond to you." My kids did not sleep for like 3 or 4 nights. My grandkids had to sleep right next to me. I'm sleeping on the couch in the family room. They're on the floor in sleeping bags right next to me. They were afraid to move. And I still believe that he was actually in my house.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. But did you get a sense of his presence when he was in the house or not at all? You're just reading it.
Oh, yeah. Now, if you look down at your bare arms and you could see the hairs standing straight up, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing straight up. And it was like ice cold in that room while this was going on. And this was in the summertime. So there was no reason. I mean, it was frigid. I'm surprised we didn't see our breath. And try to explain that to a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and even myself. I mean, I didn't know how to explain it to myself.
And you're used to ghosts and things, but this is kind of weirdly different.
Yeah, because it was a human. It would be like if you would say that you could do these things and then all of a sudden this freakish stuff starts happening in my house, you know?
Yeah.
Different when you're dealing with the paranormal, ghosts, demons, or any other entity, but another human being, that messes you up.
Why can't they ever do anything helpful like run the dishwasher?
You know, get in there and do my dishes. My bathroom needs cleaning too.
If you're really powerful, run the washer dryer for 3 cycles.
Yeah, give them the test.
Yeah, the first time I'd heard of it was actually, I was probably 15 or 16, and we were having a couple drinks like at after party. And a buddy of mine who's famous for being very honest. And someone described this guy, we'll just say he's Mark. He was like, you know, the thing about Mark is if you tell him a secret and you tell him not to tell anyone, he will never tell anyone. That's just who he is. He's had that kind of guy. But we were all talking about things like this because I used to love this stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, one time it was early morning. I want to say he thought it was like 7 a.m, something like that in the summer. School was out. And he said, I woke up and it's like I wasn't in my body, but I was maybe 6 or 7 inches above my body. It was freaky. He goes, I don't know how to explain it. But it's not like I was completely out of my body, but I wasn't completely in either.
Yeah.
And I was paralyzed, which at the time I'd never heard of sleep paralysis. But he described it to a T and how scary it was.
Yeah.
And somehow he gets up. Whether he gets up physically or spiritually, I don't know. But he says, I walk down the hall. I get to the top of the stairs and I look down the stairs and there's this hooded shadow being. And keep in mind, this is way before people talked about shadow spirits. There's no internet. There's not these kinds of things, you know, where you can share this stuff. And he said, it looked like a guy with a hood, but he didn't have any feet. He was just hanging there.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, it was scary. So I went back in. I lay down. I was breathing really heavy. My heart was beating fast. And then he actually got up again. And he said, I looked around and my parents were gone. Everybody's gone. He's got a brother. He was gone. And he's like, I'm walking around. And he had this feeling of just almost morose depression. He can't shake it. And he's like, I thought like, well, I'll go out and I'll check the mail. I'll do something normal, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, I went out, I got the mail, but I still couldn't shake the feeling that I didn't belong in my own body. He goes, and it was, I can't explain. He's like, it's really, I was sad, really sad. And he goes, I thought about killing myself.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he was like, but then that doesn't make any sense because I'm just going to feel more like I felt when I was out, which he didn't like.
Yeah.
And he's like, it just kind of went through the day like that. And I kind of felt like I was only half human all day. And he said, over time, it just kind of wore away. But it was an experience he never wants to repeat. But it always stuck with me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like the sleep paralysis that I had. I was on the operating table. I was having my arm surgery that I told you about from the car accident.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was my first or second surgery that I actually felt like I sat up during the operation and I looked around and I could see the doctors and nurses milling about getting everything ready. And I stood up. And I turned around and I looked back at the table and I saw myself laying there. And I walked out of the room with my grandma Rose, who has been deceased since 1981. I walked out of the operating room with my grandma Rose and we got down the hallway. And she said something to me. I don't even remember what it was. And I looked at her like, wait a minute. And I caught that it couldn't be my grandma Rose. She pinned me up against the wall. Then her face became distorted and demented and really disfigured, and I knew it was a demon. She actually chased me through the halls. She was trying to prevent me from going back to myself and getting back in there. And I knew in my mind that I had to get back into the operating room, climb back up onto the operating table, and lay down. And they were trying to prevent me from doing that. So that I know in my mind now had to have been sleep paralysis, but it was some type of astral traveling.
That creepy radio show will return after these messages. Welcome back to that creepy radio show.
All right, we're back to talking about astral traveling. There's a lot of people out there that do black magic and they practice astral traveling. I mean, they help hold classes on astral traveling.
I think that's the way to do it, though, because unfortunately, sometimes it seems like it happens to people on accident. And And I think those people are ill prepared for this experience, just like you, just like this guy, Mark.
Yeah.
And I could see where if they're like, okay, here's the techniques for not just doing it, but here's the techniques for keeping safe and for getting back into your body.
But these people are doing it for ill intent. You know, they're practicing black magic.
Which the CIA did, right? They started a whole program.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I found this on the website vice.com.
Okay.
And it said, found page 25 of the CIA's Gateway report on astral projection, which there was. And there was this missing page, page 25. I'll just give you the gist of it. It says, page 25 of the CIA's analysis and assessment of the Gateway process hitched a ride with an email one evening and landed in my inbox. The digital attachment felt like an unceremonious entrance for a document that was produced 38 years ago and has been missing and highly sought after since it was declassified in 2003. For years, people had been filing FOIA requests and speculating about what was on the missing page in the middle of a mind-bending report about military research into astral projection and other dimensions. There was actually a movie made. I think it was called like Men Who Dance with Goats or something like that. And it's kind of a spoofy comedy about the real program where they got these guys that they felt like might be able to do astral projection. Of course, their take was to be able to spy on enemy combatants, things like that. There's a whole report on it. Whether or not they have success, I think they said it was not successful, but isn't that what they would say?
Yeah, just goofing around one night, myself and three of my adult children were just sitting around one night. It was a weekend, we were bored, and we were like, we should try it. And my daughter Missy's like, I'm not trying it. I says, come on, let's try it. So I had them close their eyes, and I was the, I guess, tour guide. And I was like, all right, so close your eyes, focus on your breathing, breathe in, breathe out. All right, I want you to stand up, and I want you to walk up the stairs. And I said, can you picture it? Are you walking up the stairs? And they're like, yeah. And I mean, it turned out nothing happened. But we were really getting into it. You know, it would be a great a party game, you know. But I don't know. While I was doing it, I felt like it was something I shouldn't be doing.
When I was young, I wanted this so badly because, you know, I'm the kind of person that Mark tells me this horrible thing and I'm like, I want to do it. You know, and I tried and tried and tried, even beyond that in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I met a guy that I thought could help me because he came into my store, right? And he walked around my store and I guess I had a few little things. It was just like an art and frame shop for old people. You know, it wasn't a real cool store. But he looked around at a few things I had brought in and he said, oh, so you're interested in the paranormal and the occult. And this guy, he looked like he could be an instructor for Harry Potter or something. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. He wasn't over the top, but he wore black and he had a bald head and he spoke very deliberately, you know, but he was American. And he said, you know, you're into things like the occult. And I said, no, not really. You know, just kind of blow him off.
Yeah.
And he looks me dead in the eye and he goes, yeah, you are. And so that's how I met this guy. And he came in quite a few times and we talked, but he talked about an astral projection experience that he claimed he could do anytime he wanted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the one that hit me, because I was like, how do you do it? And he went over the exercises with me, anything you could Google now, you know, just relax, be calm, picture yourself. But the interesting story he told me, he said, once I was in a house up on the second floor and I was looking out a window and he said, I could tell I was in a little child's body. And he said, my mom came from behind and started talking to me. And I had to kind of, you know, and play like he's this kid. And the guy that's telling me this is probably 50 years old. And he said, I don't know what happened to the kid, but he wasn't there. It was a soulless child.
Oh my God.
And he said, I had the distinct impression that if I wanted, I could stay there. This kid's not coming back. It was strange, you know? And he said, it was the strangest experience I'd ever had. But he goes, you know, I have a daughter, I had a wife, I had things to get back to. But it was tempting because I could be this kid and just start over.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't like that.
It's odd. And what happened to the kid?
Yeah. Yeah, when you start talking about kids, that's when I'm out of it, you know? I tap out.
So there's also the phenomena where people near death have astral projected.
Yeah.
So what do we know about that?
Oh, I worked in a nursing home. I worked in several nursing homes for 23 years. And I was basically in charge of these Alzheimer's and dementia patients. And they told me in the beginning, don't get too close. You know, you have to turn your feelings and emotions off when you're dealing with the elderly that are inevitably going to die. Do your job, do it well, go home, live your life, be with your family. I'm too soft because I grow attached very easily. I would be in the hospice room with the ones that were passing in the very near future, and I would pray with them. They would talk about their family members. You know, like this one guy in particular, we're going to call him John. He was sitting in the dining room. He was supposed to be eating his lunch. The CNAs, the certified nursing assistants, were all bringing the coffee and the food out to the residents and getting them to eat their food. Like I said, they all have Alzheimer's or dementia. And John is sitting there and he's wearing a suit. And it was odd for him because he was usually in a sweatshirt and sweatpants. And he was wearing a suit. And I said, oh, you're looking pretty spiffy today, John. And he says, I'm waiting for my wife. I knew she had passed like 10 years before this. And they want you in the medical field to bring the resident, your patient, back to reality. They want you to tell him, John, your wife passed away 10 years ago. Do you remember that, John? But I'm not going to break their heart, you know?
Right.
I'm not going to be the one. So I just sat there and I smiled and I touched his hand. And he said, yeah, so pour her a cup of coffee. Her name is Emily. Pour her a cup of coffee. She'll be here any minute. And we knew that John was failing, you know, his health was failing. So I poured that cup of coffee and I set it right next to him. I said, well, you tell Emily I said hi. He says, I'll do that. She'd like you. You're a nice girl. I walked away and the head nurse came in and she's like, Nikki, you can't be doing this. And I said, why? What is it hurting? I says, he's already got Alzheimer's. He's not going to be cured.
Right.
Who am I hurting? If he wants that thought, that memory in his short time that he's going to be here, let him have it. She's like, no, you're supposed to bring him back to reality. Well, needless to say, I finished my shift. I came in the next morning and Judy goes, Nikki, John passed away last night. So he knew he was going to die somewhere in his head. He knew he was preparing for her to come.
That's such a sweet story.
Well, that happens a lot in nursing homes. And what I hate is, as a CNA, oh, John passed away today. Then the other CNAs are like, well, get ready because when one happens, two more come because it happens in threes.
Yeah, I've always heard that. My mom used to say that.
Well, I mean, why not just, you know, summon evil right then and there? You know what I mean?
Yep, my mom used to say that all the time.
Oh, that's scary.
And you know, to your point, they've actually come around on that. My wife used to set up nursing homes, like from the ground up. That was her thing, like doing the contracts, the construction, the staffing, everything. And she said they've learned, it's a process they now call joining their journey.
Mm-hmm.
They don't try to bring them back to reality. If someone's playing with a doll and saying it's her baby, then you say, oh, it's a beautiful baby, and you join their journey.
That's what I've always done.
Keeps the people very calm and relaxed, and you know, lets them know that everything's okay. So it's nice that they've kind of come around on that.
Yeah, we had a little Jewish woman. I'm just going to say her first name. It was Johanna. She even had the tattoo, the numbers from the concentration camp. She had the Wander Guard bracelet on her ankle, and she'd just walk through the halls, and I'd say, Johanna, where are you going? She says, I need to find my people. I need to find my people. And I would guide her back to her room and I'd say, Johanna, I'll take you to them. We'd go into her room and we'd sit down and she'd start talking and I'd have her tell me who was in your group. And she'd tell me all about it and everything. Then I'd slowly, gradually bring her out of it and say, look out the window. I says, look at how beautiful the day is today. And she'd say, yeah, but those damn Germans, they're going to kill us all. it was so sad. But you have to do what you're going to do, you know. You have to keep her so she's not, like, freaking out and doctors don't have to come in and inject her with something to calm her down. I mean, I loved those people. I would sit there and hold their hand as they were passing, pray the rosary with them. Nurse Judy would come in and say, "Why are you doing all that?" And I said, "If it was my grandma, I'd want somebody to." I said, "Doctors bring life into the world. And I'm doing my part and I'm helping her walk out."
Well, it's special people that can do that, because a lot of people aren't comfortable. I know I'm not necessarily comfortable in the old homes. You know, my mom was in there, but I had to be in there a lot because of my wife, and that was her job for 10 years at multiple places. But I would go, and I remember one time specifically, this nice little lady came, and you know, their hands get so soft and skeletal almost, you know? Yeah. She reached out for me, so I held her hand. And she said, "You can take me to see the devil."
Oh, my.
And I just kind of laughed. I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm sure I could get you there real fast, but I'm going to take you to the office." But one of the most profound experiences with astral projection was my mother, you know, passed away just a couple years ago. And she had Alzheimer's to the point that she no longer knew who I was. And she didn't really even like me. You know, she liked my wife. So anytime I'd visit my mom, I would have to bring this other person that I thought she might be agreeable to.
Yeah.
So that I could eat, sit at the table, you know, that kind of stuff. But as she went into some kind of a coma, they said, "Hey, you know, your mom went into a coma and she's going to pass and stuff." And so we started making the phone calls and everybody was going to spend some time with her and stuff, because we knew this was the end. And my sister called me and said, "I saw mom last night." And I said, "Yeah, I saw her." She goes, "No, I mean, she was in my kitchen."
Oh, wow.
And I was like, "What do you mean? Like, you dreamed it?" And she's like, "I thought so." She goes, "I was cleaning the house and I went in the kitchen and she was standing there," and she could even describe her clothes. She said she had on pants and a sweater and a shirt. And she goes, "She wasn't young, but she wasn't as old as she is now." And she goes, "The first thing I thought is, like, I'm dreaming." And she said, "I walked back to the bedroom. I made the bed." And she said, "Okay, I'm not dreaming. I'll go back to the kitchen and she won't be there." But she was. And she said it wasn't scary. She said she had a lucid conversation with my mother. Now, her and my mother did not have a great relationship, which is odd, because my mom really loved and had an amazingly good relationship with my younger sister. And the person telling the story was my older sister. And you would think that if my mom was going to visit somebody, you know, you go, "Oh, she'll visit Becca," because that's her favorite. She used to call Becca the sunshine and me and Ree were the storm clouds, right? So Ree said she had a conversation and my mother said, "I haven't been a good mother to you. I didn't know how to be a good mother to you." Ree said, "Well, it's okay. I'm fine." She said, "I'm really proud of who you became. I wish I knew how to be a better person to you. I didn't know how." Basically, my mom said she was proud of her and everything she accomplished and everything, and that she's a good mother. My older sister is definitely a good mother. And she said, "I'm so tired." And my sister told her, "Well, you know, you don't have to stay here anymore. Everybody's going to be okay. You can go. We understand." And basically, my mother said, "Well, my sister's coming. And I'll see her, and then I'm going to go. I'm so tired."
Yeah.
And she's like, "It's okay." And sure enough, my aunt came, her sister, and visited her, said her goodbyes, and my mom passed away that evening.
Wow.
That creepy radio show will return after these messages. Welcome back to that creepy radio show.
We're back, and tonight we're talking about astral projection. What do you got, Bill?
Well, I got an article I found on astralhq.com, and it covers a lot of the things we've talked about. It says, "Is astral projection scary?"
Yes, and here's why.
So it gives 7 points of why astral projection, at least in the myths that surround it. Number one, dying while projecting. There are people who believe you can die while being in the astral world. And they say the truth is the cord as well as your astral body are at a higher frequency and are therefore not physical. Thus, it is not possible to either cut the link or harm your astral body. And the link is interesting. It's described as a connection to your physical body by a silver cord. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. In this case, the cord would have broken and been severed. They say that's not possible. But if you take the experience of that child, where my friend says he went into the body of a child, the cord seemed to be cut.
Yeah.
So we always say, don't talk in absolutes. Nobody knows. Number two, possession by demons or evil spirits. When you start to astral project, you will begin at lower levels and gradually ascend as you increase in positive energy. These lower levels of the astral plane harbor negative entities. They have bad intentions, and if not careful, will drain away your energy. Number three, experiencing negative entities that could be hostile. The attitude we carry in our day-to-day lives affect the kinds of astral experience we get. If you are naturally pessimistic and always negative about things that go on in the world, then chances are high you will go to sleep with the same attitude. The same is converse. If you have a generally positive and peaceful attitude, you're probably going to have a positive and peaceful experience, according to astralhq.com. Number four, you can experience difficulty breathing. At the onset of the body separating from the spirit, some people claim to have a hard time breathing. First-time travelers usually panic and rejoin their physical body. This is one of the reasons beginners find it difficult to astral project. The reason behind the difficulty in breathing is the body's natural reaction to sleep paralysis. Number five, an inability to reconnect with the real world. Sound familiar? Another fear that astral projectors face is being unable to reconnect with the physical body after a separation. Of all the people who have given an account of their astral projection adventures, joining the body is never a problem. In fact, it takes more energy to keep away from traveling in the astral. But again, your experience is completely contrary to that.
Yeah.
They do say, if you want to rejoin your body, the mere thinking of it will pull you back. And this is like, again, I don't like people that talk in absolutes because experiences are always different, especially when it comes to the metaphysical or the paranormal.
Well, maybe that's my whole problem in life is I have too open of a mind. I don't rebuke anyone's, you know, theories on anything, you know, because anything is possible.
Under God, anything's possible. Number six, becoming obsessed with the astral world. There are people who fear becoming obsessed with astral projection. Once you've had a good experience, you'll likely want to try it again. It's like crack. I put that in. There is nothing wrong with this other than the fact that you can get too attached. Number seven, that you may have more nightmares. As we mentioned earlier, you need to have the right state of mind before astral projecting. This will influence your level in the astral realm and what you encounter. If you have a negative attitude, you will likely only get to the lower levels where the bad and the scary exist. So this kind of reminds me, the nightmares, the fire within, what you did talk about was an astral projection moment that your daughter-in-law had, where she showed up in your room.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's always been one of my favorites.
So we're going to call her Katie. She was going through some stuff, some serious stuff. How can I put this eloquently without like putting her on blast? She woke up one day and she thought she was God. And she was telling my son that she is God. She was saying that she made the grass this way for this reason, trying to explain God, you know, and God's reasonings, all kinds of crazy things, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this was just out of the blue, like somebody flipped the switch.
Yeah, to this day, we don't know why it happened, you know, because she's perfectly normal now. She's raising my grandson. Everything is perfectly normal. But when it was going on, she had this vendetta out for me. She was like, yeah, your mom, she claims she loves God. I come into her house and she doesn't welcome me with open arms, nor do I get a kiss on my cheek. She said, she shuns me. She treats me like I'm evil. She treats me like she's better than I am. All this weird talk. And then I'm sleeping one night and I get woken up and I turn over and I look and she's sitting on my wingback chair. She's just looking at me. And that's what woke me up, was the feeling that someone was looking at me. I'm like, what in the hell are you doing here? And she's having this conversation like she is God and she's here to judge me and telling me all these wild things like, oh, I can't even remember half of the things she said, but just creepy, creepy things. And after our conversation, she just got up and walked out of the room. So the next day I called my son and I'm like, why was she here? He says, she was sitting on the foot of the bed all night. He said, for like 4 hours, just rocking back and forth and chanting some weird that I don't even know what she was saying. He says, why? What happened? And I told him what happened. He said, that was about the time that she was doing this. So she was astral traveling. She astral traveled her ass all the way to my house.
Yeah.
Because she had a point to make. They ended up calling the police. They were going to have her committed. They were like, she is talking straight out of her ass. The cops came. And the cops were like, so you think you're God? She says, I know I'm God. Well, how do you know you're God? How do you know I'm not? And just having this banter back and forth, the cops left without her. And they were like, no, there's nothing wrong with her. If she wants to think she's God, she's fine. Well, then they took her to the mental facility. She stayed there overnight. But then they told my son to come and get her because there's nothing wrong with her.
Yeah, but to you guys, there's clearly something wrong with it.
Definitely. I mean, she would walk in the room and everybody'd go dead silent because we were just afraid of what she was going to say. I would say something. She says, I made you say that. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm in your head. I know what you're thinking. And I made you say that. But she did it in a way, Bill, that, you know, me describing it doesn't even do it justice. She freaked me the hell out.
Right. Well, at one point, a psychic friend of yours had died.
Yeah. This was right around the same time. A few days before, I went to my son's house. This psychic that I worked for that summer, my daughter and I did, she passed away unexpectedly. Nobody expected her to die. I don't even know what she died of. But then I went to my son's house because things were just getting weird with Katie again. And he opened the door and he kind of like motioned his head like, get in here. So I come in and she is just sitting on the couch and she's sitting like Buddha. She had this blank stare on her face, but it was like evil. And she looked over at me and she goes, that psychic knew too much. She had to die.
That is the creepiest thing ever.
Yeah, because she didn't even know about the psychic. I didn't talk to her about me and my daughter Missy going to the psychic, which was in Menominee, Wisconsin. She's a very well-known psychic. That's why I'm not saying any names. But her passing just blew me away. But I didn't tell Katie about her, so I didn't even know how she knew about a psychic. She came up with this without any knowledge at all.
Nikki doesn't plug her book a lot on the show, but I will. It's called The Fire Within by Nikki Luciano. You should read it. It's an amazing story. Expertly written. Even my wife, who's not really into this kind of stuff, tore through it on a camping trip and said, gosh, she's a great writer.
I really appreciate that.
Before we leave, let's share a couple scary stories that we pulled from the internet. Nikki found one on Reddit that was pretty good. You want to read that one, Nikki?
Sure. It says, I think last night was the scariest astral projection experience I've ever had, by Lucid Fever Dreams on Reddit. And they go on to say, I've been astral projecting and dreaming of other dimensions and worlds since I was a little kid. Some have been incredibly scary, some have been joyful and fun. Last night, though, that must have been the scariest. I was having a dream about being at a hotel for a vacation with some friends. In that dream, I knew the hotel was haunted, but my hotel room specifically. I wasn't afraid because I deal with that sort of stuff all the time. I went into my hotel room to grab my purse before going out to dinner, when suddenly I got this overwhelming urge to lay down on the bed. I then woke up in my actual bed in real life to hear voices. At this point, I knew I was in a middle place between another dimension and my own 3D life. I was awake, very aware, yet blurred between the two dimensions. I heard two voices speaking behind me, a male and a female. I couldn't see their faces though. The male said to the female, I wonder if she'll wake up. I wonder if she'll move. And then I did move, I'm not sure why I did, because for some reason, this man's voice terrified me. I had never felt so scared in all my life. It was like my body was commanding itself to move without my permission. I swear I've never been so scared of a voice before or anything before. Once I moved, I stayed completely still, then heard the man's voice come very close to my ear and breathe a few times. His breath was very heavy and loud. He said, Marina, in a very disturbing deep voice, which was my first name. I then remember wanting to leave whatever that was, and I woke up completely. Can someone please tell me what this experience may have been? I've never had one quite like that before. It reminded me of many experiences that I've had, whether I was sleeping or just sitting on a chair reading a book. I've heard someone say my name out of the blue, or I've heard somebody breathing right by my ear. And I never knew what it was. I just thought it was the spirits around me. But yeah, I can really relate to that one.
And I think that's what people need to understand. When there's an astral projection, you're not just out of your body. You're in another world, more or less. You can say, oh, I just want to fly and go over my town and do all that. And I think there is that aspect of it. But there's also beings that exist in this other world. And you have to be prepared for that and to see and experience these things if you want to do this kind of thing. Which, you know, again, I always go back to what I recommended to my own children. No. This one I found on a website called darkstories.org, which is pretty cool. And it's by Sparkly Figs. I can still hear and see everything nearly 12 years after this experience. It still haunts me. Soon after high school, I had started exploring my spirituality, metaphysics, the paranormal. I was very naive, I admit. I started reading astral projection. My mind was blown. I had to experience this. I had been dabbling in sound wave meditation, better known as binaural beats, and I saw there were several developed for astral projection, out-of-body experiences, etc. I wasted no time. I quickly grabbed my headphones, plugged them in, and laid on my bed, eager to explore the other planes of reality. Well, that didn't happen. But what did has stuck with me all these years. I was currently living at my parents' home. My dad was no stranger to the paranormal. He often states he still hears footsteps and strange voices, but that's another story. Everyone was asleep and had been for hours. I was laying in my bed, headphones on. I started hearing a crackling noise and thought to myself, oh my God, it's happening. It worked. Right after that, I was quickly snapped out of my joyous mood upon hearing the most blood-curdling, horrific scream of my life. Only it wasn't coming from the room. It felt like it was coming from inside my head. I quickly snapped back into quote-unquote reality and ripped my headphones off. I hear the scream from inside of me again. I start to bawl my eyes out. What's happening to me? Is this psychosis? I thought to myself. Again, I hear the scream, but this time it's next to me. I quickly glance over and there's nothing there. I start to panic even more. The scream happens again, but this time it's on the other side of the room. I ran over and looked around the area. In a panic, I emptied my laundry out, the drawers from my desk to no avail. Then I hear it again. It jumped to the other side of my room. Frantically, I rush over. The screaming moves to the other side when I do this. Crying and feeling rather insane, I screamed out, "Please leave me alone. I can't handle this." After pleading for whatever this was to stop, I hear the scream again. But this time it's not in my room. It's in the backyard. I look out my window. Of course, I see nothing. But I hear it again, further away this time. I heard the scream for another hour or so, gradually moving further and further away. To this day, I've never been able to wrap my head around this experience. The few I've told said they believe I had an experience with a demon and was nearly possessed. Needless to say, I've never tried to astral project again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me too. But the part where they said they screamed that they can't handle this to stop because they can't handle this, You'd never want to say anything like that. Because if something is your enemy, if something is bad, there's something evil around you, you don't want to show fear. And maybe I'm just a different type of animal, but that's when I puff up my chest and I'm like, no, not today.
You're right. If it was a demon, it doesn't make a lot of sense to lay yourself upon the mercy of the demon.
You might as well just lay yourself on the altar and be no sacrifice.
Right. But maybe it was a plea to God or something like that, you know, to take the experience away.
I don't know.
But whatever it was, it seems to have worked, right?
Yeah.
I think on that note, we should call it a night.
I agree.
Well, I can't think of a better time to close this out with a St. Michael prayer. So let's do that. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls.
Amen.
And they do prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. So while you're out there, be careful, stay safe, and stay creepy.